Blog Talk Radio.
Happy New Year. The boys are back. Wednesday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. I am the one and only Randy Zillia, and I'm back after a couple week hiatus. And joining me as always, the one and only Mike T. Mike Trapadazzi. Good evening, Michael. How are you tonight, buddy? I guess Mike Trapadazzi is not with us. I do apologize for that. So, welcome back. Happy New Year. We are back in the saddle here, ready for Real Sports Talk Radio, backsportspage.com. You can find me, you can give me a call here tonight, 760-283-0846. Again, 760-283-0846. Real Sports Talk Radio live every Wednesday night from 7 to 8:30. Good to be back on here. We'll talk a lot tonight. We have Lou Musto from Cover32 and SNY.com joining the show to talk about all the moves in the NFL that are happening, all the changes that are going on with the coaching carousel, NFL playoffs happening this weekend, getting rolling. We're going to talk about some of the big moves, some of the big headlines going on, the big shocker coming out of Penn State over the last 24 hours. Bill Riley's heading over to the Texans to become the head coach there after, you know, taking the spot of Joe Paterno out in Penn State. Crazy, crazy situation. Also tonight, 8 o'clock, Tim Castro, the Brooklyn Nets color radio analyst, a good friend of mine for years and years. He's going to be on to talk a little Brooklyn Nets basketball, to call around the NBA, talk about the Jason Kidd situation. And there's a lot to go on there with at this point. But, you know, let's start with the NFL. And, you know, obviously there's a lot to talk about with college football as well. I didn't get to see Johnny Manziel play. But at the same time, we're now at this point where the fun is really starting as far as the NFL is concerned. Looking forward to seeing what happens during for the playoffs run. So I was shocked to see that New Orleans ends up in the sixth seed. Without the Dome, I don't think they're going to be as successful. I just don't see them really contending for a Super Bowl. I'm not sure if they can really win on the road. Undefeated at home this season, one of the best one of the best home teams in football. So we're going to talk to Lou Musto about that around the 7:15 mark. Just awaiting the one and only Mike Trapadazzi. He'll be joining us. He is the co-host here at Real Sports Talk Radio. Real quick, let's pay some bills here. You can find us on Twitter at RandyBSD or at MTrapadazzi at at Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, Facebook.com, Real Sports Talk Radio, and on Twitter at Back Sports Page. And now let's welcome in the one and only Mike Trapadazzi. Michael, Happy New Year.
Hey, Randy. How's it going, man? How are you?
Yeah, we technical difficulties to start the new year off. What a way to go.
Starting off with a bang.
Yes. I honestly say that the boys are back. Michael, welcome back. So what did you do on New Year's Eve?
Kept it simple. Some family, some friends, you know, nothing crazy. As you get older, you tend to move away from the craziness, and you tend to head towards the more mundane and simpler things.
Like our show.
Yeah.
Like our show. So like I was saying in the opening of the show here, there's a lot of news going on. There was a lot of stuff going on with the NFL. Were you surprised? So I was just talking about the change over at Penn State with Bill O'Reilly. Are you surprised by this?
No, because if you read between the tea leaves, you could see that he was, either on his way out this year or next year. I mean, they did lower his buyout to go to the NFL from, I think, 13 down to 5 this going into this year. So they clearly had a feeling that he was going to leave, or that he was not fully into that, staying there for the long term. So by lowering his buyout, it increases his odds of getting a job. And hey, if you read some things down there, that maybe he wasn't seeing eye to eye with the AD and people there. So, if you're Penn State, you got $5 million out of it. The problem is now where do you go in terms of your coaching decision? But from his standpoint, no, I wasn't too surprised. I was surprised he actually stayed for a second year, to be honest. I mean, if you listen, it almost seems like he had that Browns job if he wanted it last year. So I was kind of surprised he came back.
Think about what you just said.
Are you trying to tell me that the Browns aren't a stable organization?
No, I wouldn't. Why would you ever think that? Oh, hi, Trent Richardson. We like to move you. Okay, Mr. Whedon. Yeah, you won a couple games for us last year. We're just going to sit you down right here. Would any of the cheerleaders like to play quarterback this year? Anybody? No.
To be fair,
no? Oh.
I do agree that it was ridiculous to fire Chudzinski after 1 year, because they look at their quarterback situation. I mean, you shouldn't get fired because you had to play Brandon Weed in 10 games. I mean, that's not fair.
Well, with that being said, hey, Mike, we have on the show tonight, right? We have an action packed evening here, Real Sports.
Yeah,
we have Lou Musto from Cover32 and SNY.com. He'll be joining us to talk a little NFL. We're going to break down some of the playoff matches, talk about all the different coaching changes. So we're talking about one right now with Bill O'Reilly leaving Penn State. And I'll tell you, I'm going to give you my opinion on that in 1 second. And then we also have Tim Capstraw, one of the radio voices of the Brooklyn Nets. I know you have some questions for him, and I sure as heck do too, some revolving around Coach Kidd and others around the talent on the team. And then also with Mr. Musto, we're going to do thumbs up, thumbs down on some of the NFL news going around. So let's keep going with this Bill O'Reilly thing, with him leaving and going to the Texans. What does this do to the Texans at this point?
Well, I think it gives them stability. I mean, he's a guy that was, if not the top coaching candidate, certainly one of the top four or five of guys coming into the season and going into the offseason. This team is not that far off. They had quarterback problems last year. They had injury problems. They were a little bit lacking in some skill spots. But if you look at the roster as a whole and you look at their top-end players, Watt, Brown on the offensive line, obviously Foster, Johnson, the kid from Clemson, Hopkins, is a stud at wide receiver, just a rookie. That's a lot of talent that is on this roster. Couple that in with having the number one pick, whoever that is. If you had to make a guess right now, it would probably be Bridgewater. Unless they get enamored with one of these other quarterbacks. I would assume it would be a quarterback. I don't think they would go someone like Clowney or Matthews. But I don't think this team is that far off. And I think getting a high-profile coach or a hot coach, quote-unquote, really gives it a little bit of a boost going into the offseason. You kind of get that energizing momentum you get from having a good coach. Kind of like, look at what the Eagles did with getting Chip Kelly. Kind of jump starts your offseason.
No, I agree with you 110%. And they have to decide what they're going to be doing now with the quarterback situation as well. I don't think you're bringing Matt Schaub back.
I'm sorry?
I don't think you're bringing Matt Schaub back. I don't think at this point I don't think you want to bring him back. I don't think you want to have I don't think you want to bring, I think they have to go after a brand new quarterback, but is there a fit?
Yeah.
It's not that there's somebody they want. Is it whoever they take, is it a fit?
Now, it is with the new slotting system, it isn't that, you know, crippling to have the take a quarterback number one overall, take anybody number one overall. You know, no longer are they getting like $20-30 million in guaranteed like Sam Bradford did. But, you know, do they go after, say, something like a Josh McCown on a 1 or 2 year deal and then draft Bridgewater or Bortles or Hundley or whoever's coming out of the draft at number one? Or do you go with what seems to be the norm nowadays, and that's draft the quarterback in the first round and then throw him to the wolves and see what happens? That's their decision. That's the decision that they have to make. They're obviously not going to bring Shaw back. I think it's best for both parties if they move on. But you wonder, do they go more of the old school look where you don't have, you know, you have the veteran who lets the rookie sit for, you know, X amount of weeks, or do you pull the Luck Griffin, you know, that type of scenario where they just play from day one? I think that will give you an inclination of what quarterback they plan on taking if they don't do anything in the offseason with it.
No, I
don't know
agree.
If any of these guys, honestly, I don't know if any of these guys, if you look at them, none of them really scream ready-made. You know, a lot of these guys look like they may need to be more of the Geno Smith area, where it's, you know, the Jets played him all 16 games, but was he really ready? I mean, to me, I'd like to think the Jets were kind of forced by themselves to put him in. But I, looking at these quarterbacks, you know, if I'm Houston, I would look long and hard about maybe signing a vet on a, you know, an older guy. Like, I would think McCown would be the perfect fit, you know, on a 1 or 2 year deal to be the guy that pushes them and maybe wins the job and plays for a good part of the season.
Well, I think at this also, too, you do have an aging team. You know, you have Andre Johnson, who's not the same type of player he's been in the past. Your quarterback's position is not settled, and your defense was one of the worst in football this past year. So, you know, I think this year, you know, the Houston Texans certainly have their work cut out for them. It's interesting to see where they're going to go with the number one pick. I got to watch a little bit of the bowl games today in passing. I got to watch a little bit of Manziel. I think Manziel's Tebow squared. You know, this is another Tebow situation. Just, I don't see much success coming from that. Is that wrong for me to say that, too?
I don't know. It's not. You're kind of right in a way, I think, but at the same time, he's definitely got more of a quarterback mentality than Tebow does. You know, it's not like his mechanics are broke like Tebow's, where it's not like he's running for all these yards. I mean, he did throw for almost 3,500 yards this year and 30 touchdowns. And, you know, those are numbers Tebow never came close to at college. Tebow ran for a lot more yards, but it's not really that. I can get the similarity because what you're saying is that he's a college product. He's not going to be good in the pros. I'm kind of torn. I don't think so, but, you know, then again, you look at guys like Doug Flutie and Drew Brees who had similar type builds. You know, those guys panned out in the pros. Obviously, Brees is on a different level. I don't think Manziel is Drew Brees, but, you know, slight build, smallerish quarterbacks, you know, especially one with his mobility, and not out of the realm of possibility that he can be in the NFL and be a productive quarterback.
I agree with you 110% on that. We're going to be joined by Lou Musto in a minute. Real quick, I don't mean to get off of this topic real quick, so I wanted to throw this question at you. I don't know if you heard that there was a big TV death today. I don't know if you heard about this.
Yeah. Totally ruined 2014 right off the bat.
Yeah, it sort of did. Uncle Phil from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, James Avery, passes away today. It's really a shame, man. I was really upset about seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, how many people in that grew up in the early to mid 90s grew up with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Everybody, you know, I talked to five people today, and all I had to tell people was Uncle Phil died, and everybody knew who I was talking about. No one assumed I had an Uncle Phil. that had died, everyone knew immediately who I was talking about. And that says something. You know, that's like telling somebody, you know, older than us that, you know, like, in a way, like Fonzie died, or you know, Mr. Cunningham died. Everybody knew who you're talking about, and that's definitely what the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air did, and specifically Uncle Phil. I mean, you know, everybody can almost recite their favorite Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode or their favorite lines from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'm not going to tell you how many people still do the Apache dance from the episode where Will and Carlton were stuck in Vegas.
Oh,
everybody knows that episode. Everybody does the dance. Everybody does the dance. So, I mean, yeah, that says something that you don't have to refer to him by his real name, and that you know who he is based on a character he played 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame that he passed, because he was such a good... He played that role so well. He played the role of Uncle Phil so well. It's going to be missed. I think he's going to be really, really missed. I did see the news headline. I wanted to bring it up to you. We had technical difficulties at the beginning of the show.
Did you also know he was the voice of the Junkyard Dog in the Hulk Hogan cartoon from the 80s? Was it the Rocket Wrestling cartoon or whatever?
And I think we've just gotten our useless fact of the evening. As in
there you go.
Right there. They're right there. Let's welcome in Lou Musto, cover32.com, also writes independently for SNY.com. Lou, there's so much NFL news going on right now. I think there's a little bit of overabundance of news. Let's start with the coaching carousel. We know that the Texans have officially filled their vacancy with Bill Riley from Penn State. From over at Cover 32, what have you heard about this move with the Texans?
I've heard some good, I've heard some bad. Obviously, for the Texans, it's a good hire. He seems to be a very good football mind, a very good offensive mind. He could do a lot of good work with whatever quarterback they go with in the draft, or if they sign a free agent quarterback, whatever they choose to do there. That's one of their most important things, is upgrading a quarterback. So he should do a lot of good work there. But there are a lot of people upset with O'Brien and the way he pretty much abandoned Penn State and all the kids that he convinced to go there despite the situation that they're in. And he's leaving for more money and a better situation while they're going to be stuck in Penn State. And frankly, in my opinion, that was very wrong. And I think it says a lot about the man that he was able to, as recent as Saturday, telling them that he's not going anywhere and getting kids to sign letter of intents, and then he's out.
Hey, Lou, it's Mike. You bring up a good point about O'Brien and whether or not he left Penn State on good terms or bad terms, depending on how you look at it. You know, from his standpoint, you can obviously say, hey, he jumped, and he probably stayed a year later than I think a lot of people assumed he would, coming off of what he did last year. Where do you see Houston going from here? Obviously, it's kind of a top-heavy roster. There's some big names, but it's a roster that obviously underperformed last year. Do you see them looking at a veteran quarterback, or do you think they're going to go that draft route with the number one pick?
I think they'll definitely take Bridgewater or Manziel with the first pick. I can't imagine them going any other direction. I don't think they really need anybody that they would select with the number one pick at a different position. So I definitely think they'll take a quarterback. But I wouldn't be surprised if they also tried to either find a veteran on the free agent wire, or if they even let Schaub go again, at least for a little bit, until they felt comfortable with letting their rookie quarterback take the reins. Whatever they do, they're going to have to be patient. It's not going to be something, you know, they're not going to be a playoff team instantly again like they were two seasons ago. It's definitely going to take time. Their offensive line can do some improvement, but they have a lot of weapons in place on offense. They have a lot of talent in place on defense that they could be successful in a couple of years, especially with O'Brien's help.
Another coaching vacancy that is obviously very well known, and no one really had a surprise of it coming based on how everything unfolded the last couple of weeks, and that was the Redskins. The reports came out today that they were wanting to talk to Jim Caldwell, Perry Fuel. What do you think, or where do you hear seems to be that their wish list in terms of preference to be their coach?
I know that the media's popular, at least, candidate is Art Briles from Baylor, for obvious reasons, because that's where Robert Griffin III is coming from, and he'd be comfortable in that offense, and because the offense is so good, it might be something that works in the NFL. But you can't ignore how awful his defense is at Baylor, and the Redskins' defense has been awful, at least in terms of pass coverage, for a few years now. So hiring Art Briles would really be a risk, and I don't know if it'd be something that would really improve them. Obviously, the Redskins' problems go further than the coaching situation, the talent on the offensive line, the wide receivers, and the defense as a whole. Art Briles is definitely the popular candidate I've heard. I don't know if that's the direction they're going to go in. I know I've heard that they've also asked the Giants if they can interview defensive coordinator Perry Fuel, which I think is interesting. He's had interviews before for head coaching jobs, but no one ever bid on him. If I was going to put some candidates out there for them, I think Jay Gruden would be a good man to look into. And I know I've heard things about Cowher as well, but Cowher is such a risk to me. He hasn't coached in so long. The game has changed so much. I don't like it. I don't like it when I hear it for the Giants, and I don't like it when I hear it for the Redskins.
And then also with the Redskins, at this point in time, with RG3 going to actually have to, you know, he sat out the last few weeks of the season, and now he's fully in the offseason training to get back really into football shape. Not knowing who the coach is, but what is the general feeling about the Washington Redskins concerning RG3? There seems to be a lot of turmoil in the locker room concerning him. In your mind, is this a salvageable situation with RG3?
I think it is, but I think it will really depend on how next season goes. It's a touchy situation because of what they spent on him just to get him, and if it turns out that he's a flop, he's a failure, he's a bust, and they have to move on or they have to find something else, you know, it's going to cripple the franchise, really, because they put all their eggs in his basket. At one basket, they put all their eggs in. If he doesn't turn out, it's going to be a big disappointment, especially considering the season he had last year. I think you have to wait another year to see what happens. I think you have to see what the new coach can do with him, what some more talent around him can do for him, because he doesn't have a lot of it. So I think you have to see what happens. But I do have my concerns about RG3, health-wise and talent-wise, after seeing how he played this season.
One team that everybody midway through the year pegged as a almost walk-away division winner not only collapsed, but collapsed in epic fashion, given how the rest of the NFC North health situation unraveled, and that's the Lions. They got rid of Jim Schwartz, which a lot of people, given how they fell apart, expected, and it didn't come too, you know, late into Monday that he was gone. Their GM, though, came out and said that he feels like this is a team that's the most attractive job in terms, I guess, of talent on the roster and, you know, ability to have a quick turnaround. Do you see that, and what do you make of the whole Lions situation with Schwartz, and where do they go from here?
I think the Lions are definitely at least one of the most intriguing options for a coach out there. They have a lot of offensive talent. They have an outstanding defensive line that's young and is only going to get better. They obviously need some improvements in the secondary. The offensive line could improve some as far as the running game goes, at least. And Matthew Stafford, I think, is the biggest factor into a coach coming to the Lions, as well as their future success. Because if he's going to be a good quarterback, then they can go ahead. They can go ahead with the future. They can trust in him that he's going to be able to lead them where they want to go. But I'm not sure Matthew Stafford is that guy. He just doesn't appear to be that guy to me. Anytime they need him to make a big play, he just can't do it. Even with a guy like Calvin Johnson, where you just throw the football in the air and he'll make a play, he can't get it done. And that's my concern for any new coach that's going to step in there. And I would think that's a concern for any coach themselves, if they're considering looking at that job. I know a lot of people think Wisenhunt from the Chargers, the former Cardinal coach, would be an interesting candidate for them. And I would love to see what Wisenhunt could do with Matthew Stafford in that offense. But I definitely agree that easily one of the best jobs out there right now is the Detroit Lions.
some of the other coaching positions that opened up with Greg Schiano down in Tampa. Lovie Smith has been heavily rumored. Does this franchise in Tampa need to be rebuilt from the bottom up? Since it seems like at this, like Schiano only got 2 years to try and make this work, and what he was trying to do, it just didn't work. Do they have to start from scratch again, or can they sort of just fill in the blanks here at this point?
I think they do, just because they don't really have a whole lot of pieces down there anyway. You know, there's a couple players that you can certainly keep and trust to be big contributors in the future, but there's really not much there. You have uncertainty at the quarterback position. The defense is a little shoddy. The offense is a little shoddy as a whole. I think it's definitely something you scrap and start over and see what you can do. Tampa Bay is a good football town, so it should be easy to build a good football team, I would think.
And then, of course, we have to also bring up the insanity in the NFL known as the Cleveland Browns, a franchise that's so proud. It just seems like nothing can really, really go right there. Wanted to get your take, and with the take of Cover 32, you know, what's the general feeling about the Cleveland Browns right now?
The general feeling about the Cleveland Browns is pretty much the same feeling that's been regarding the Browns for the last couple decades, where they've been such an inferior team, an inferior franchise that just doesn't seem to know what it's doing. The firing of Rod Chudzinski really frustrated me to see, and I've kind of come around to see that maybe it just wasn't a situation that was working, so why spend more time on it? But this has been the Browns' MO, even with the old ownership. It's just not giving coaches enough time, not giving talent enough time, just not putting enough effort into seeing what can happen over a couple seasons. They want something instantly, and it's not going to happen instantly, it seems. And that just seems to be the way of this franchise, that they have to be this disappointing, heart-wrenching, frustrating franchise for all of its fans. And I know the fans are just so used to it now. I don't know what they would do with a good couple seasons. The Browns fans deserve something to be happy about, and I don't know when that's going to happen. You know, you didn't give the guy a quarterback to play with. You didn't give him much of anything. The wide receivers broke out. Josh Gordon was outstanding, and I don't know if that had to do with Chudzinski or just because he's an outstanding player, but they made big steps this year despite a lack of talent, and I don't know what Cleveland's going to do to fix their problems. I don't know if they ever will. They just seem like that franchise that has to be at the bottom of the barrel.
Let's shift over to the playoffs. We're gonna quickly go run down game by game. Let's go through some of the key points. Lou, you're a football junkie, and so you're the right guy to have give us these predictions and give us a key for each one of these games. Let's start with Kansas City and Indianapolis. What do you think is going to be the key in this game?
I think the key to this game is going to be whether or not the Chiefs' offense is able to show up, and you get the Chiefs of the first half of the season and the second half of the season, which just was not as good as a whole as they were in the first half of the season. Andrew Luck and the Colts are going to bring it. They're a great team. You know, they're not Super Bowl caliber, in my opinion, but neither are the Chiefs. And frankly, I believed that they were pretenders throughout the season, and as the season led on, that proved to be true. The Colts beat the Chiefs a couple weeks ago, and I think that we're going to see the same thing again in Indianapolis on Saturday, and you can expect a big performance from Andrew Luck, I think, against the Chiefs defense.
The night game on Saturday is a game that I think a lot of people are intrigued by, the two offenses, obviously the Saints and the Eagles. The Eagles are on a roll right now, closing out the end of the year with winning the NFC East. The Saints clearly are two different teams, home and away. It's supposed to be pretty cold, remnants of a snowstorm in Philly over this weekend. Do you see any way that New Orleans can kind of shake this stigma of winning, of not being able to win on the road and get it done in Philly, or do you think this is a legitimate problem that this franchise has playing outdoors and playing outside of the Superdome?
I have my concerns about the Eagles defense and whether or not they can slow down a high-powered offense like the one that Drew Brees and the Saints bring to the table. They haven't been exactly a top-notch defense. They definitely have a lot of work ahead of them in the next couple of years. And it'll be interesting to see what Chip Kelly can do. But I am in I'm in northeastern Pennsylvania, and it's supposed to be 5 degrees, 7 degrees on Friday.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know that Drew Brees and the Saints can handle that weather. I've yet to see it. They're just not good on the road, and they're not good in the cold. And in a stadium that's going to be rocking like Lincoln Financial Field, I don't think the Saints are going to be able to stop the Eagles, who have just been unstoppable most weeks. And even when it's a close game, they come out on top. And they already played in a Snow Bowl, so they're ready for the cold weather. And I think LeSean McCoy, Nick Foles, they're going to give the Saints their handful. It's going to be a close game. I don't think the Saints are going to play as bad as maybe some people might expect because of the cold weather, but I think the Eagles will pull it out on top.
The other game in the AFC is a game that I think either team, I think a lot of people can pick them as a sleeper-type team. San Diego obviously got in pretty luckily, I guess. If you're a Steeler fan, they got in thanks to the refs. If you're a Charger fan, you got in by divine intervention. But the Bengals are a team that a lot of people pegged as the de facto sleeper in these playoffs. Do you see it that way? Do you see the Bengals as a team that can make some noise in the AFC? And obviously, if you do, you expect them to win on Sunday?
I don't think it's fair to peg the Bengals as a sleeper, knowing that they have a pretty good offense that has played better in the second half of the season and an outstanding defense led by defensive coordinator Mike Zimmer. So I don't think it's fair to say that they're an underdog, they're a sleeper, especially on a game Sunday where they're going to be playing a Chargers team that probably shouldn't be in the playoffs, or actually shouldn't be in the playoffs. they have A.J. Green, they have Andy Dalton, like I said, a great defense, and the Chargers just do not have a good defense. As good as their offense was in the first half of the season, it was not good in the second half of the season. Slowed down. Phillip Rivers did not play as well until they met the Giants, and then everything turned around for those last couple of games for San Diego. But I think because their defense is so poor that they're going to have a problem slowing down Dolan and A.J. Green, and I think A.J. Green is going to be the X factor for the Bengals in Cincinnati on Sunday.
Last one from me, then. I tend to agree with you about the Bengals. I think they're a lot better than a lot of people want to give them credit for, but can they go on the road in the second week there and go either to New England or to, obviously, Denver if Indianapolis wins? Oh, wait, no, they go to New England no matter what because they're the 3 seed. Is this a team that can make noise on the road? You know, they were 8-0 at home, but they were, around 500 on the road, actually under 500 on the road. Is this a team that is built to go on the road and win in one of the places in the playoffs?
I think they could. I think they have the talent and the defense to win on the road, especially in a cold weather place like New England. I think New England's been kind of a team on the rope, despite the fact of how they finished in first place in the NFC or AFC East and second seed in the AFC. They haven't wowed me, really, in any of their games, and I think that puts them at risk to lose a close game regardless of who they're playing. I think the Bengals definitely have the talent to be the type of team that could upset them. They're capable of running the football if they need to. They could throw the football. But that defense, I think, would make the big difference playing in a cold weather city like Foxborough. So I could definitely see it. I could see them rolling into the AFC Championship. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
All right, Lou, the last playoff game, of course, San Francisco going over into Green Bay. These two teams are not strangers for themselves. Are strangers to each other. And it's going to be a really fun type of game. Aaron Rodgers, I've been one of those people who's been, I don't buy into the Aaron Rodgers hype. I believe they're a good quarterback. I think while he was out, they were able to develop a running game and trust into their running back. This is one of those games where I think this is a pick-em. I think both teams are very, very good. I don't know if either one of these teams can make the Super Bowl and or beat Seattle, because Seattle's defense, in my eyes, might be the best in football. If you had to give us the key to this game and to pick a winner, who would you go with?
Well, I think that the Packers running game actually is going to be the key to this game, because I think the 49ers will definitely key in on shutting down Aaron Rodgers, especially it's probably going to be freezing in Green Bay. They're going to have to run the football, and they've done a good job running the football. Even before Aaron Rodgers got hurt, Eddie Lacy was having a pretty solid rookie year. He certainly surprised me, because I didn't expect him, of all the recent Alabama running backs, to be the best of the three. So if the 49ers can just shut down the running game, I think they'll be in good shape. Their offense has been pretty good, and it's built to succeed in a cold-weather city like Green Bay as well. So if I had to put a prediction on the game, I'm going to say San Francisco is going to pull it out, but I wouldn't be surprised if it went either way. I think these teams are very closely matched, and I think they have a tough road ahead of them after this week regardless.
All right, and real quick, I got some thumbs up, thumbs down with you. I'm going to let you know some little minor NFL news, and you can give me a thumbs up, and if it was a good thing, obviously a thumbs down if it was a bad thing. Giants came out this past week and pretty much said they would like to bring back Tom Coughlin to coach the Giants. Is this a thumbs up or a thumbs down situation?
Oh, I'll give that a thumbs up. I think Tom Coughlin is a great head coach. I think he's underappreciated at times for his work with the team against some difficult obstacles. And some of those obstacles include his coordinators, who he might be a little too loyal to. And I think that deserves a thumbs down if Kevin Gilbride does not get fired by the end of this week or sometime soon, because I think they have to make a change on offense.
Okay, thumbs up, thumbs down. Mike Tomlin being a little vocal about being not making the playoffs this year and making bold predictions for next year.
Thumbs down to that, just because I don't think he has a right to complain about anybody screwing anybody after what happened with the Dolphins.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Rex Ryan gets one more, gets to finish out his contract with the Jets next season.
Thumbs up, but unfortunately I don't think it matters for him, because the Jets aren't going to provide him with an offense that's capable of doing anything.
Okay, and thumbs up, thumbs down, Lou Musso being able to go cover the Super Bowl this year.
I'm hoping, I'm praying that I'll be there. Thumbs up, but we'll see.
Backstory Stage has already gotten the emails, and they're saying, thank you for applying, but no. Lou, thanks for taking a few minutes with us tonight and coming on the show. You can catch Lou on Twitter, at Lou Musto, and also cover32.com, as well as check him out on SNY.com. Lou, did I miss anything?
No, you're good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Have a good one, Lou.
He's awesome. He brings his A game each and every single time. Now, Mike, one of the things we were just talking about with him is that Green Bay San Francisco game. I don't think either one of those teams can make the Super Bowl this year. Last year, San Fran was really good. They were one of my picks to they actually made a great run in the Super Bowl. They almost came back and won the game. I just don't think it's the same team they were last year. Kaepernick's not playing the same. I love Anquan Boldin on that team. I think they're a great team. I think they're a dangerous team still offensively. Obviously, with Frank Gore, still a solid running back. Crabtree's back playing at the wide receiver position, playing very, very well. It's just, I just don't think that team is the same. And I think Seattle just might be that good. It just might be that good. I don't know. I'm just not sure if I really believe in San Francisco again this year, which hurts my boy Brandon Russo, who's out there in South Carolina. He's a big 49ers fan, of South Langer, friends of the show. All of them very big San Francisco 49ers fans. I just don't see that team being able to make the same type of run they did last year. I think a lot of teams have figured them out. I think a lot of teams know that you have to stay on Kaepernick and make him work and make him feel pressure to do it. And I'm just not sure if this is the same type of team that can play the same type of defense that they did last year. It's not even the offensive side. The defense seems like it's has took a step back. They're giving up three more points than they did last season. The team just at times doesn't look like they're responding to Harbaugh the same way they were. Green Bay, on the other hand, Jose has sat on this show with me and has told me many times that I'm very, very, very tough and difficult with Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a little overrated, and they needed to develop more. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers' offense needed to be more. Their defense was not good. I'm a firm believer. Mike, I've said this before. I've always given Aaron Rodgers a very, very hard time. I've always said he's been a little overrated. But the way he came out and played, he struggled in his first game back. But I do think now they're a little bit more of a balanced team. And while you stepped away for a second, I don't think San Francisco is the same team they were last year. Last year, San Francisco sort of came out. I don't want to say they came out of nowhere, but their defense is giving up three more points a game this year than they did last year. And it's just not the same type of team. And I think Seattle's a better team than they are. And they don't have any real momentum. Last season, they had some momentum going into the playoffs. So, your take, can San Francisco get back?
Can San Francisco? I think so. They have a run game and they play good defense. Those are things that can win on the road. They're not going to be playing a home game unless New Orleans can somehow win road games, which I don't see happening. So, San Francisco plays that type of game that can travel well. And if it travels well, then they have a shot. I don't see why not. It's a proven pedigreed team. Now, are they as good as they were last year? I don't think so. I think they're a little bit older on defense. I don't think they're as explosive offensively, partly because I don't think Kaepernick has played to the level that I think maybe they anticipated coming into the year. But I definitely think they have a chance. And like I said, their style definitely plays itself to playing well in the playoffs and at least keeping yourself in the game.
So if you had to pick one of the four games, which one are you picking as a must-watch game?
A must-watch game, I would say probably that game. I would say Green Bay, San Francisco. It's going to be cold. It's going to be a Sunday night in Green Bay. It's going to be around 0 degrees, I think they said. Obviously negative degrees with the wind chill. You got two Super Bowl quarterbacks. Obviously, Rodgers has won it. Kaepernick's been to it. You've got two teams that have played some pretty high-intensity games the last couple of years against each other. And you've got two coaches that have coached in Super Bowls. And I think all that mixed in with the allure of it being two historic franchises that have a playoff history in the past definitely can, grab some of that attention.
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now. For me, the game to watch, I think, is going to be, as much as I want to say San Diego, Cincinnati, I really think New Orleans and Philly is going to be fun to watch because I think there's still going to be a lot of offense. I think it's the cold. We're making a bigger deal of the cold than it really has to be. I think I'm going to go across the board here and give you my predictions for each game. And 9 in 10 times, I'm wrong. So if you're a gambling person, take whatever I don't pick. I want to go New Orleans because I think they have a much better complete team. But I think the home field advantage is going to help Philly here a little bit, to give them a little bit of an edge. So I'm going to go Philly 28-24 over New Orleans on that game.
Okay, I think Philly will win. I agree.
Okay. Well, now, I'm going to go Kansas City and Indianapolis. KC is on the road, and they're playing in a very, 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 very tough environment. Now, Indy's been up and down this year. Kansas City's been pretty consistent. In my opinion, if Kansas City controls the tempo of the game, like they've been doing for majority of the season, I think they're going to win a 20-14 type of game. If it turns into any type of a shootout, I think Indy will win a 28-14 game. because I just don't think Kansas City has the offensive weapons to compete in a shootout. And so if you're asking me which one do I think it's going to be, you always have to give, in this situation, the better team. There's a reason why Kansas City is the better team. I'm going to go with Kansas City in that defense. So I'm going to go with that original that original score and go with, what did I say? It was 20 to 14.
20-14. I think Kansas City is going to win. I think a lot of people are putting a little too much stock into what happened a couple weeks ago. That was an aberration. I don't think Kansas City is going to turn the ball over four times. I also don't think the Colts are going to be able to run the ball as well as they did. You know, the Colts rested a lot of guys, or the Chiefs rested a lot of guys to get healthy last week, and they still almost won the game. But when you're plugged into that fifth spot, and they've been plugged into that spot for weeks now, ever since they lost that second game to Denver, they would have needed Denver to, you know, obviously lose and them to finish at 13-3 to have a chance at it. But I think they're a better team than Indianapolis. I think they're a more well-rounded team. I think Indianapolis' offense maybe has a little more punch to it. But I think Kansas City's running game is better, and don't underestimate Alex Smith being able to make plays. He showed you in the past in the playoffs he's able to make big plays, and when needed to this year, they have opened up the offense. You look at that second Denver game where they were right in it, going right to the end, toe-for-toe with Denver. So I think a lot of people are maybe kind of underselling Kansas City a little bit based on how they finished the year. But you look at those two San Diego games, you know, those are games they were either winning at the end or they had a chance to win at the end. And you're talking about an 11-5 team that very easily could have been 13-3. So I would agree. I think Kansas City will win, you know, probably something like, I think 21-10 is a good number.
Okay. We're not too far off on the score there. And then there's that San Diego-Cincinnati game. San Diego seems to me like they can be on one of those Giants runs. You know, the team that's getting sort of hot around that time. I think Cincinnati's defense is much better than San Diego's offenses. And San Diego's defense, you know, I think Cincinnati's offense is their handicap, actually. I'm going to go Cincinnati getting out of this first round. I'm going to go 21-17 Cincinnati. But I think it's going to be a lot closer than everybody thinks.
See, I agree with you. The Bengals will win. I don't think it's going to be close. I honestly don't. I think the Bengals are a better team. They beat San Diego in San Diego. I know San Diego turned it over a couple times in the red zone in that game. But the Bengals are the better team. They're 8-0 at home. I think they're averaging something ridiculous number, like 38 points a game at home. And San Diego's defense isn't exactly Kansas City's or Seattle's or, you know, San Francisco's. It's a defense that can give up big plays and is susceptible to the run. I mean, look what Kansas City did last week with the B squad in. I mean, they took their JV squad and basically moved it at will and had that game, control of that game at 24-14 in the second half. So I think there's real questions about whether San Diego is one of those quote-unquote magical ride teams or if they're a team that is just got in by getting lucky and are one and done. I think it tends to be the latter. I think it's something. I think it would definitely be something like, I would say, you know, maybe 28-14 on the low end, but I definitely can see the Bengals putting up 30 plus.
All right. Well, you know what? I thought it's going to be very interesting. So we're going to gauge this. So I think we're pretty much on the same page for a majority of the games. By the way, we have Tim Capshaw in about 11 minutes. So we're going to start going over some of the NBA highlights. We're going to transfer over. Real quick, 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846 is the call-in number if you wanted to discuss any of these topics with us tonight here on Real Sports Talk Radio. And I want to transition, and we're going to definitely get Tim's opinion on this, and I'm desperate to get your opinion. I know it's a desperate, strong word here, Mike, but I just saw a article courtesy of ESPNNewYork.com by Mike Mazzo, special at the ESPN New, New York. Nets nickname game set for January 10th. I don't know if you saw.
Oh God. Does that mean you're going to get the truth? You're going to get the truth. You're going to get big ticket on their jerseys. What is Brook Lopez is playing? Would his nickname be like Orthotics?
Well, here's I'll give everybody, for those who don't know, here's the story. The Brooklyn Nets will wear their nickname player jerseys on January 10th against the Miami Heat at the Barclays Center. Fans can buy the nickname jerseys starting Wednesday at the team store at the Barclays Center. Nets jerseys featuring nicknames like D. Will, Deron Williams, Truth, Paul Pierce, and JJ, yep. Joe Johnson. Cost will be $100.
Really? That's Joe Johnson's nickname?
I guess so. Double J. JJ.
I could have sworn his nickname was Albatross.
I thought it was overpaid.
What other euphemisms for ugly contract can we... unmovable.
undesirable.
Cat killer.
Fans can also buy nickname T-shirts as well. The Nets will offer fans nickname food and beverage selections at the concession stands at each one of their chef tables at the 4040 Club restaurants will be named after a different player's nickname. Okay, now, before I go off on this, and we're going to ask Tim about this too, but before I go off on this, what do you have to say about this? Because mine's not going to
be. I don't like it. I think it's dumb. People are going to buy them, though. Now, I really feel like when it came out that Ray Allen was going to use Jesus Shuttlesworth, and his name was going to say Shuttlesworth on the back, I was like, that's fantastic. No one else do it. Let Ray do it, because basically for 15 years we've all assumed he was actually Jesus Shuttlesworth anyway. So let Ray do it, and everyone else stay clear. Do your own thing. Let Ray do Shuttlesworth. But no, it's got to be a whole NBA thing. I don't like it. It's dumb. But, you know, obviously people are going to buy it because that's what happens. People buy these silly things, and, you know, there's no reason for it. I hope the Knicks don't do it, but, you know, at this point in the season, they may not wear any uniforms in one game, and I'm not surprised, so.
I think this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. This is like Michael Jordan wearing a jersey saying his airness on it. This is the dumbest thing, and I can't believe that they are doing it. If this is what the Nets franchise is actually worried about right now, they're in bigger trouble than I think they are, and we all thought they were. It's really the truth. That's really the truth of the matter, and I'm not talking about Paul Pierce. That's the sad...
The Paul Pierce?
That's the sad truth of the whole entire thing. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's dumb, and I really do think that the Nets have more concerns than putting nicknames on jerseys. They're a below-average franchise who made some really dumb decisions, who has a billionaire owner who's never in the arena and doesn't have a pulse of the franchise. They have a rookie coach who was playing the game last year, doesn't have any control of the team, which doesn't have an identity. Their stars are bickering with each other, and there's only three teams below them in the standings right now for the worst record in the league. So, and they're worrying about nicknames on their jerseys. Does anyone else really have a problem with this like I do? Because, I'm a fan of this franchise.
I thought you were going to bring up the more telling article that Stan Van Gundy was saying, how it's a train wreck. And,
We're going to get to that.
Guys who don't understand it. Plus, you also have Kevin Garnett saying, I don't know what my role is on offense. That's a problem. Yeah. 40 games, 30 games, 35 games into the season. You know, I understand that players have been out and hurt. Pierce missed some time. Obviously, Lopez is out for the year. Williams was hurt. But, you know, it all comes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the year, if you remember. You know, people were fawning over having guys like Jason Terry on their bench. And anybody who watched the Celtics last year, and I have a couple Celtics fans who were like, I can't believe the Celtics were able to get rid of Jason Terry. It's amazing that somebody would take Jason Terry back. And Jason Terry was awful last year. Now, Jason Terry was hurt a little bit this year, but when he's played, he hasn't been good. nobody's been good on this team. I guess the best player on this team was Lopez, and when the best player on your team is a guy that can't stay healthy or is a seven-footer that now has an obvious chronic situation with his ankles or his feet, you know, that's not good. Just ask the Portland Trailblazers, who have done it three times now with big men who can't stay healthy, and how it's a crippling thing to your organization.
Well, I'm going to throw this at you. Let's wipe out the Eastern Conference right now, too, because look, the Nets are still, believe it or not, in the race to make it in. That's the scary part. They're only 3.5 games out of that final playoff spot. But
is it funny that? Well, I was just going to say one thing about the East. Everybody wants to say Heat, Pacers, which, yeah, it's probably going to end up that way. If you think about it, one of these teams, I feel like this year is so much like 1999. Not strictly from a Knicks standpoint, even though the similarities are kind of eerie, right down to the fact that it was a garbage team for most of the year where the coach may or may not get fired, you know, playing uninspired basketball, got hot at the end of the year and had to go through Miami and Indiana to get to the finals. Sounds a lot like this year. Probably not going to happen, but I feel like something is going to happen this year. I just feel like it's too much, people are putting too much stock into, oh, I can't wait for that seven-game series between Indiana and Miami. Isn't that usually when a team sneaks up and beats one of those two teams? I mean, how many times have we seen that? You know, I can't wait to see the Lakers beat up on the Pistons. Well, look, the Pistons beat them in five games and probably should have swept them in that finals. You know, I can't wait to see, the Lakers run right through the Mavericks. Well, the Mavericks swept them in four games. I don't know if it's as set in stone in the Eastern Conference that Miami and Indiana are going to meet in the Eastern Conference Finals. Is it possible? Yeah. Probable? Yes. But I just don't know. I think the East is too crazy this year where we shouldn't expect the expected in the Eastern Conference. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we should be expecting one of these teams to get hot at the end of the year and be one of these two teams. Because I think Miami has shown you a real dislike. And Phil Jackson said that the third in a three-peat is always the toughest. And if you look at the Bulls, that was their toughest of the three each time. That 93 series with the Knicks, and then they had to go six games with Phoenix. The 98 against the Jazz, they had to go six with the Jazz, and were a Jordan jump shot away from having to go to game seven. So I think the Heat are kind of in a vibe where they're just getting through the motions to try and get through to April. And Indiana, I mean, yeah, Indiana plays great defense, but when they get into a game with a high-scoring team, or let's say an efficient team that can score, like a San Antonio or an Oklahoma City, do you really feel like Indiana for four games can score more than those teams? I just don't see it from Indiana. I don't see it. I think Indiana and Chicago are teams that are built for 1995 instead of 2014, where they could get away with scoring 94 points a game, but the rules don't allow it anymore to do that. And the Bulls have found out the hard way that you have to score somewhere close to 100 points a game to be a team that can win consistently in this NBA.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question here. And if there's any of these teams that surprises you the most that they're in the top eight of the Eastern Conference, let's forget about the fact that the records of any sorts. But if I told you Toronto, Washington, Charlotte, Detroit, and Boston are the fourth through the eighth seeds, what team surprises you the most that they're there?
Oh, I think it's absolutely Charlotte, because I don't think anybody really expected much from Charlotte. I mean, they went from 7 to 21 wins last year. They have a new coach, Clifford. Obviously, they have, they picked Zeller with the fourth pick. You're not really sure how that was doing. Then they kind of made an interesting signing with Al Jefferson, who's playing very well. Since he came back healthy, he's playing very well. Obviously, Kemba Walker took another step in his development, and I think Steve Clifford's – I don't know if you can find a guy that's done a better coaching job. I don't even think it's close. I think he's so far and away the coach of the year, it's ridiculous. But, I mean, Boston had some players still you know, Detroit, everybody expected after they signed Jennings and Smith to at least contend for the middle of the playoff spots. And Washington, again, was another trendy pick at the beginning of the year, especially after they got Gortat, to make that leap into the playoffs. So I think of all those teams, the other three, you could talk yourself into saying, yeah, I can see them being somewhere in the 6-8 range. I don't think anybody, under any circumstances, even Michael Jordan, imagined that Charlotte, this far into the season, would be where they are in the playoffs and playing well. It's not like they're just there by a product of the East being bad. They're playing good basketball. They're playing tough defensive basketball, and that's an extremely pleasant surprise, I think, if you're in the Charlotte front office, to see how quickly this team has played well under Clifford.
And before we get Tim Castro on the line with us, I guess the other question I have, if you had to pick a team in the Western Conference that surprises you, that they're in the top eight right now, who would it be? Obviously, Oklahoma, San Antonio, Portland, I think we've all adjusted to the fact that Portland is playing much better, and the Clippers. You have Phoenix, Houston, Golden State, and Dallas. If I had to say which one of those eight surprised you, which one would it be?
Who was the fourth team again? Because I was going to say Portland, but I didn't want to have that fourth team be someone that was obvious.
Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Portland, Los Angeles Clippers, the Phoenix Suns, the Houston Rockets, Golden State Warriors, and the Dallas Mavericks.
I think it's Phoenix. I think Phoenix is in that same mold as Charlotte because they get Bledsoe, they've got Len in the draft, they got a lot of the expiring money now from Washington in the Gortat for Okafor deal. But you also now have this dynamic roster movement where guys like Bledsoe and Gortat, the Morris twins, Mason Plumlee. It is Mason, right? Miles is on the Nets? Or is it
Miles,
backwards?
I think you're right. Miles is on the Nets.
Okay. Mason's become, I think, a fantastic under-the-radar center for that team in the way. And Jeff Hornacek's another guy that you have to look at as a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate, because that's another team that you really didn't expect them to be moving in this direction that they are. And they're playing better than Charlotte is in a conference that's much tougher.
Well, you know what? Let's bring in the radio color man for the Brooklyn Nets, the color analyst, Tim Capstra, who's been a great mentor not only to me but to many others in the world of professional basketball. Tim, good evening. How are you, my friend?
Great to hear your voice, Randy. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's Randy Zelli and Mike Tramatazzi here. And, Tim, let's start with the Nets before we jump around the game here. What has been I guess you can't pinpoint one reason what the Nets' struggles have been, but if you had to say one thing, what would it have to be, one or two things, on why the Nets have not been able to live up to this expectation level?
Well, I think you're right when you say it can't be just one thing. I think when you're playing this poorly and the way the Nets have, it's really just a tough combination of a little bit of just everybody. I think everybody and everything has not gone right for this team so far. And really, injuries is a huge part of it. I think the beginning the preseason without Deron Williams, it was enormous. Not having to go into the season really without him being that big of a part of it, then he gets hurt, and then he's out a while with the ankle problem, and then he's sitting down, and then he finally comes back. They play a few games, and then Brook Lopez goes down. So I mean, those are really your players you're playing through as your heart and soul of your team, of your setup offensively, and really, you see, defensively, in the case of Brook especially, that they miss him on both sides. And the injury factor has been the biggest part of everything, but is playing this poorly so far, it's a whole bunch of things.
You brought up not having Brooke Lopez and that being killer, because I think he's been their most consistent player this year when he's been healthy. But again, that health word is a problem that we've now seen in multiple years with him, and it's the same problem with his feet or his ankles. He's got this big deal now, and obviously at his age and when he's performed healthy, you would have to assume he's their franchise anchor. How big of a problem is this now going forward for this team that even if they can get things figured out, they've now got an anchor on their team that we don't even know if he's ever going to be, you know, at the same type of physical ability because he hasn't been able to stay healthy now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's always going to be in the back of your mind now. I think when it happens once or twice and he's recovered and you feel okay and he's playing good, you're not thinking so much about it. But I think it happens this third time or in some, in, I guess, 3.5 times or however you want to look at it. His you know, certainly missing at the end of this year, I think it's going to be very difficult for the team, for fans, for coaches, not to have that at least in the back of your mind. And maybe that's not fair, but I'm sure it even would be in the back of Brooke's mind. It's going to be something. There is just such a history of big men that have had bad feet, and it's been a problem for them for their careers. And for some guys, they've been able to pause, regroup. Zydrunas Ilgauskas comes to mind, and then still have an effective, productive career. He wasn't as good as Brooke prior to it, but he still was a solid player. But he had a numerous foot problems, and then finally came back. But his brother Robin also has had the same injury, and he seems to be recovered okay. But I'm with you; it's going to be in the back of your mind. There's no doubt about it. It is a difficult thing, and really hurts you. When you take into consideration not only the team, but the person. And Brooke Lopez, the person, is one of the, you know, I'm not going to pretend I'm a great friend, but I just see how he interacts and the type of person he is. And he is special, and it is really disheartening. And, you know, you wish for the best. You really wish for the best because he certainly could have 100% recovery, but you also are very cautious about it.
You know, Tim, you've been around with the Nets for a long time, just like, when I was there, you were there, and we were lucky enough to watch Jason Kidd as a player. And there's no secret about the friendship that he and Deron Williams have off the court. I know they were hoping that Deron would pick up some of the game mentality that Jason had about becoming a pass first point guard, especially with the amount of talent that they have on the team this year with Joe Johnson, Paul Pierce, and, you know, Jason Terry coming off the bench, being able to give a scoring punch. And of course, Garnett still has offense he can give down with injury. It just seems to me that, you know, Deron has not really looked comfortable when he has been on the court this year with this team.
All right, you know, when he first came back and he finally came back from his ankle injury and he was orchestrating the offense with Brooke Lopez prior to Brooke going down with the injury, I thought he was playing an awful lot like Jason Kidd for a few games. Like, he was getting 13 assists, 12 assists, and it kind of worked pretty well. The Nets had won 4 out of 5 games. He was part of that, and his assist numbers were way up. And now what has happened in with the injury to Brooke again, Deron Williams has been asked to be more aggressive, and he hasn't been able to do that. He hasn't been able to take it up. He hasn't been able to, go by guys or pull up and hit the deep jump shots. He hasn't created havoc on the defense and forced foul shot opportunities and hasn't gotten to the line much and hasn't set up teammates to the level. He wants to be more aggressive. He needs to be more aggressive. And yet, things start getting away from this entire group in particular games. You know, second quarter yesterday, I mean, it's a 10-point game, then all of a sudden it's 15, and then it's 20. And I think it demoralizes the entire team, and I think in some ways he goes that way also, and it keeps him from being aggressive and confident. And I think that because he is the leader, the guy with the basketball, I think sometimes that has trickle-down effect, and it's very frustrating. Jason Kidd, I'm sure, is trying to do his best to get him to play at a higher level and to really kind of will his ability and his skill onto the other players, and yet it hasn't happened to the level the Nets need. That is quite obvious so far.
Tim, you look at the whole Atlantic Division, and I know it's maddening as a Knicks fan to watch the team struggle, and yet in the back of your mind you're saying they're only three games out of first place, and then to see them go out and lose again by 15 points or whatever, and you're like, you can see that there's still potential to do something with this season. And I think the same thing lies for the Nets, but how maddening is it if you're Billy King even, or if you're Jason Kidd, to every day know, like, hey, guys, if we can just turn this thing around, we're right in this. But then it seems every game, like you said, it's they're playing well, and then all of a sudden there's a five-minute stretch where they get outscored a bunch, and now all of a sudden the game's over and they're deflated. I mean, it's got to be maddening to see it on a day-by-day basis when you know, like, hey, guys, we could still make a run here, but then you see every game they're losing by 15, and you're like, they're not taking – it's almost like they have no ability to take advantage of the situation that they've got themselves in.
Yeah, I mean, with this stretch, especially right now, Indiana, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, I don't know that you're necessarily saying, Mike, I don't know if you're necessarily saying to yourself, well, they got to go out there and they got to get two out of these three games. They got to get a game. No, you wanted them to be competitive, and you wanted to see that they, when they come back or they get it together on the road. Remember last year's team was right around 500. There was a coaching change. PJ Colissimo had taken over the team. Went down to San Antonio, was destroyed. They had like an 8-point quarter. It was very embarrassing. But the next game, just like this, almost like the schedule is the exact same schedule as last year. In fact, it is for these three games or these couple of games. And they went to Oklahoma City the day after New Year's, 2 days after New Year's, and they played the best game that they did all season long, and it really kind of propelled them. So you don't know when it can come together. And when it could really happen. And sometimes in these difficult games, you kind of want to see if you could really jumpstart your team or really get some belief going, but there really hasn't been that kind of feeling going on right now. And that's what the Nets got to shoot for. It's got to come together. Even reading, some quotes from Kevin Garnett, the frustration is really, up and down this team. And there are a lot of veteran players that are just – frustrated, and the term embarrassed was used by Paul Pierce after the game. So there's a lot of negativity going on, but it's also exactly what you say, Mike, about if they can get it together. And I don't think the team necessarily looks at the standings. They just kind of want to start winning, and just for the sake of feeling better. Forget about, like, the playoffs. And if they're not going to be a really good team, they're not going to get that excited about that anyways. They want things to get better right now. It's not fun for these players. Take a lot of pride in their ability and their ability to play well. And this is a terrible time for them. They just hopefully can get it back, get it together, hang in games, show mental toughness, and start feeling better about themselves. I think it's more, you can get all X's and O's and what offense, what the defense you want to run. I think this is gotten to the point where it's in these guys' head, and I think psychological coaching is more important than physical coaching right now.
Tim, has Jason Kidd deserved the criticism he's been getting?
I think all coaches get – that comes with the territory. If the team doesn't play well, regardless of what's going on, the coach has to take criticism. There's no doubt about that. But there's a – it again, and that's just the way it is. Jason Kidd will tell you that. You understand that. But he's being criticized. Everybody's being criticized. Nobody's doing well. Nobody's whether it be management, ownership, the coach, the players, this player, that player. Our radio broadcasts aren't good. Nothing's good right now. Nothing is good and it's everybody's involved, and that is the problem. Coaches, that comes with the territory. You sign up to be a coach, you're probably first in line to catch the criticism. That's how it is. Jason Kidd gets a little bit different kind of treatment at times because of the respect he's garnered over the years. But, some people forget about that, too. You start losing, and that kind of diminishes also. So it's a tough challenge for him. And yet I know he's working hard at it, but it is a very, very difficult challenge right now for him.
And Tim, of course, I me being a basketball junkie, and I really just watch plays, and I see, like to see how things develop. Would you like to see them play Reggie Evans a little bit more, knowing now that they lose Brooke? Because Reggie does bring a little bit more of the, you know, the hustle aspect, the defense, the rebounding aspect, and it also can free up that power forward position to be a little bit more on the offensive side from Garnett, from Blatch, because you'll know you'll have that banger underneath to offset the finesseness of that four position if they decide they want to do that, make that four spot a jump shooter. Even if you want to even experiment and put Paul Pierce at the four and go small, you could put Evans at the five. Do you think
yeah,
that kid will start experiment that way?
I think there could be we saw the Milwaukee game where the Nets played very well, but you have to temper your enthusiasm because Milwaukee doesn't play defense very well, and it's certainly a lot different than playing. It's a big difference between Milwaukee, then going to Indiana, and then San Antonio. But I did like Livingston at the one, Deron Williams two. So basically Paul Pierce at the four. He rebounds pretty well for a four, and Joe Johnson kind of – everybody down – that's called downsizing. Everybody moved down a position. And I think what that does for the Nets, it kind of opens up the floor a little bit, and a lot, to tell you the truth. Gets a lot of guys out on the perimeter. Gets a lot of guys a little bit quicker against their opponent. When Paul Pierce goes against a four-man, he can go by him. When Joe Johnson goes against a three, he's better than going against a two at times. Same thing with Deron Williams. Everybody can kind of play a little quicker, play a little bit looser, and I think Sean Livingston understood his role. But like a lot of guys that are reserves, you get limited amount of positive play for them, and you got to really judge how much, you know, how long it's going to last. I think Sean Livingston can give you a boost at time to make things better. I do think Reggie Evans can provide a boost to make things better. But again, when he, you know, there have been times this year when he's been out on the floor and he's frustrated yet also. So there's no perfect answer of, oh, boy, when this guy's there, everything's going to be perfect. I think there are ingredients there though, that you just alluded to, that when if used the right way at the right time, and I can't tell you that I know exactly what that is. I'm just saying utilizing different bodies, different strengths of players for periods of time during a game, I think could help the situation. And Reggie Evans certainly fits that mold.
A couple guys that I've noticed while watching that I think in a season that's been obviously well short of expectations and, as you said, not fun for a lot of people, I think Sean Livingston and Plumlee have been two of the better surprises, I guess, in a way, for this team based on maybe playing a little bit more of a role than a lot of people thought. I think Livingston came in as more of the backup point, and he's played very well in an extended role given Deron's injuries. And Plumlee, I think, has made the push to get more minutes and is obviously going to get more minutes with Brook out. How would you rate those two guys in terms of their actual ability to the team given to what we maybe thought they would give them in training camp?
Yeah, I think Plumlee is really, you know, really been terrific. I mean, he has really provided something the Nets don't have. He gives them bounce. He gives them life. He gives them athleticism. Mm-hmm. You see the amount of lob passes that are thrown to him around the basket. I think players get excited when he's on the floor to have an opportunity to put it up there. He gets up and down. He's a good communicator on defense. He makes, I used the term yesterday, he makes mistakes of aggression, not mistakes of omission. And you can take that from a rookie and let him go every game. Again, no, he falls under that category of the law of diminishing returns at some time. You've got to be careful. You know, he might be a 15- to 20-minute guy a game. Same thing, again, with Sean Livingston. I thought we saw a good stretch in the beginning of the year where he was really good, but then over a period of time, it kind of goes on a little bit longer. You realize, well, you know, maybe he's not really a starting point guard in the NBA, but he's really a good backup. Mm-hmm. And I think the role that, you know, he's kind of shifted back into is probably a little bit more suited for him. Although I do like his IQ. I like the way he thinks. I sometimes worry about the physical aspects of the game because of the knee issues he's had and the way he's built.
Yep.
Thought he got worn down a little bit when he was playing a number of games in a row extended minutes. The So I think you got to be careful with him. I also think you got to make sure guys' confidence is high. So I think you're right. Plumlee's been very good, pleasant surprise, terrific draft pick at 22 in last year's draft. And Livingston certainly has done a solid job, sometimes really good this year. I'm anxious, you know, maybe he'll get more time. And yet, again, you've got to measure guys like that minutes. But it's really the stars that got to play like stars again, I think, for this net team. I think Darren Williams, we haven't seen how he did it. He came back right from the injury, and he looked pretty good and spry and moving all over the floor. He has been stagnant lately. Joe Johnson hasn't been the same. He was a pro for the first 2 months of this year. I think he's really tailed off. 2 months might be long. The last six or seven games, he's really tailed off. And doesn't seem like the same player. So he's got to get back into playing a high level. And of course, everybody's talked about Pierce and Garnett. So those guys got to lead the way. And if they're leading the way, I think the other players, you then can then sprinkle them in and really kind of utilize them in roles that really make sense for them. 10, 15, 20 minutes a piece, and then they can really hopefully put together a good quality of 48 minutes, because it's just too many games where there's, you know, one or two guys playing pretty well and then one or two not playing well at all. This whole team has to become much more cohesive, much more mentally tough, and not allow their lack of offense or missed shots to affect them on the defensive side. It's gone on too long now.
Tim, we're going to, you know, we were about to go. I have two quick questions for you. The first one being, what did you think when you heard about this new thing on January 10th that the players are going to have nicknames on the back of their jersey? Are you for or against this?
Oh, wow. I really haven't really broke that down, you know. My favorite story of that, though, is my favorite story about that is the original guy that had nicknames on the back of his jersey was Ted Turner with the Atlanta Braves. And he had years ago. And he had everybody's nickname on the back of their jersey, but because TBS was on, they had a player with number, I can't think of the guy's name, but he had a player that was number 17. And TBS, which the Braves were on, was Channel 17 all around the southeast, wherever it went. And so he made that guy with that and it didn't have a nickname, have the nickname Channel. So that they got in trouble for that. So he was thinking it was Channel for Channel 17. So that's what makes me think of that story all the time. I don't know. I mean, I didn't have as big a problem with the Christmas uniforms. That didn't bother me. I thought, you know, it's merchandise. People love wearing the gear of their team or just gear of any team. Everybody got all upset about that. I was like, hey, what's the big deal? I think it's kind of it's interesting. I think, you know, the nickname thing, I don't know, but it's probably whoever's in charge of marketing with the NBA is doing a heck of a job, because since I was a young kid and nobody cared about it and the games were tape delayed to what it is now and what it is globally, they might make some mistakes along the way, but boy, oh boy, they really know what they're doing from a marketing standpoint.
And then my last question, you know, since you've been with the Nets for a while, you were over at the Meadowlands. You were over at the Prudential Center, and now you're at the Barclays Center. And being in that media room before the game, they've always had some good food. Out of the three venues, best food, which are the three venues?
No doubt. The Barclays Center is unbelievable right now. I feel like bringing a bottle of wine. I could have a date. I could take my wife out on a date. Barclays Center food is terrific. They do a great job. Aaron Harris kind of oversees it, you know, and it's really good. None of them were bad, though, to tell you the truth. None of them were bad. I guess I'm easy to please, you know. I can't believe I get to go to NBA games and talk about the games. I'm the luckiest guy in the world, though. And I'm not paying for the food. Everything's great when I'm not paying, that's for sure. So all three are really good, but Barclays is like a fine dining experience. Or maybe that's where I'm eating now, so I want to be nice to them. But the That's an interesting question. I like that. You guys are taking it a little bit different direction. I like it.
Well, Tim, real quick, every summer you do your basketball camp in Wayne. Can you just really quickly give us a little bit more info on the camps that you do and some of your outside projects outside of working with the Nets?
Well, yeah, I have summer basketball camp all the time, and for about six weeks this summer at the Wayne PAL in Wayne, New Jersey. It's a beautiful facility. It's a day camp, 9 to 3, ages 6 to 16, boys and girls. It's been started with 1 week a long time ago. It's already up to 6. People enjoy it. It's, you know, it's good coaching, but it's good enjoyment. It's for skill level, all skill levels. You don't have to be – you can be learning how to play. You can be young, and it's a good opportunity. And the Wayne PAL is a beautiful air-conditioned facility, so that works out well. That's kind of what I like to do. I broadcast some college, too, and I run some programs out in Long Island also. But the big chunk of my off time is preparing and running summer camp over at the Wayne PAL.
And, Tim, while I have you here, I have to tell Mike this story. During a broadcast one time, I heard you tell this story. It was during a blowout game with Coach Lawrence Frank. Lawrence had already picked up a technical, and I guess he was trying to pick up a second one, and you had told a story about when you were coaching, and you had picked up a technical, and you, the referee told you, he said, listen, I'm not giving you a second technical, because if I do, you know, like, I have to watch your team play, you have to watch your team play.
Yeah, so. It's a great line, isn't it? The referee was Edgar Carcato. He just passed away 2 months ago. That was a good tribute to him. That was a good tribute. Imagine that, him saying that. I'm all fired up, and this old crusty official goes to me, if I got to watch him, so do you, sit down. I couldn't believe it. That was the funniest. I couldn't wait to tell everybody. Yeah, I couldn't wait. That was a great line. I was going to play a boxing one on the ref after that, you know?
I was just going
to guard him all over, you know? But it was a great man, Edgar Carcato, and it's a true story. And yeah, if you're, you know, blowouts, they usually break out some banquet material. So that's kind of what, but that's a true story. That's not exactly a tribute to my coaching ability, that's for sure.
Well, I appreciate you coming on for a few minutes with us talking Brooklyn Nets basketball, and you know, we really appreciate it. Hopefully we can have you on again in the future.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you. Tim Capper, Tim Capistro joining us here on Real Sports Talk Radio. And Mike, that brings us to the end of our journey for tonight for Real Sports Talk Radio. Good show tonight, man.
It does.
Thank you for coming on. Really appreciate that. Tim Capistro coming on. The playoff games this weekend. We really didn't get to talk about the fact that Carmelo had a sprained ankle, and this is the first time you and I have really been on the air with each other. It's taken about a month. I think my last show that I have done was right in the beginning of December. You filled in for me when I wasn't on because I was tied up, and we've been off for the last 2 weeks. So it's good. It's good to be back with you, and it's good to be back on. And you know, next week is going to be just bigger and better for Real Sports Talk Radio. Follow us on Facebook, and also follow Mike at M. Tramatazzi. You're going to have to spell it for everybody because they're not going to be able to find you on Twitter. You really have to make that shorter. If you can, it would make everyone's life, including me, a little easier, so I can promote you a lot easier. So you're not doing me justice when you do that. Like, you realize that, right? And then, listen, it's your last name. If you want to, you know, legally change your last name, I think it might be, you know, I think you might be doing me a big favor if you do that. I'm just saying.
I'll put it into consideration.
I understand, you know, if you don't want to, that's okay. So real quick, picks doomed to go wrong. I'm going to do one pick that's going to be doomed to go wrong, and I think I'm going to make that pick. Should I make it an NBA game this week? No, I'll do an NFL game. I'll make it fun and interesting for everybody. My pick sort of go wrong that I'm probably pretty much going to be wrong with this upcoming weekend is I really do think me picking Green Bay is going to blow up in my face.
I don't know. I mean, I think you're on point. I would say Green Bay has a pretty, I would say they've got a better than chance to win than not.
Okay, I think all games are going to be close, but that's the one for me that I think is going to blow up in our face. But we'll find this out Saturday and Sunday for Mike Trevitazzi, Randy Zillian, Real Sports Talk Radio, BackSportsPage.com.